You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Thursday, December 15th, 2016. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Thomas Gagin, labor lawyer, author, the four things we the people can do about our unjust voting system and a President Trump. Also on the program today, North Carolina legislature attempting a coup. Attorney Lawrence Lessig of Trust Electors, is that what it is? Says that 20 electors are ready to flip. 4 days away. 20 electors flipped to Clinton, she would win the Electoral College. What is it? Electors Trust.
Electors Trust.
Meanwhile, a federal judge may release the FBI warrant that led or preceded the Comey letter. NBC claims that intel officials claim Putin directly involved in the hacking of the election.
But this is preposterous.
He's here with us now.
Hello, Donald. I'm making nice.
Meanwhile, Trump, still angry about lack of emojis on Twitter, bans them from his tech summit.
Sorry.
And Labor Secretary Thomas Perez almost jumps into the DNC chair race on a night Keith Ellison gives a pretty stirring speech on his behalf, or his own behalf, I should say. And Jerry Brown and state attorney generals vow to fight Trump. And that's actually a big part of Thomas Gagin's piece is a strategy for that. Some of it's about the electors, and some of it's about, and we're going to be talking about that going forward, because we may be moving into an era where states become a bulwark against the federal government. Or I should say, not so much a bulwark against it, but will step in and uphold regulations that may get rolled back by the federal government. Now, with that said, if I recall correctly, the Bush Clean Air Skies Initiative, it's hard to say without cracking up, actually caused maybe anywhere from 2 to 12 states to roll back their emission standards. In other words, it forced some states to allow for more lead and heavy metals in their air and mercury. So understand that there are limits as to what a state can do, although Thomas Gagin has some interesting ideas that work on a political level. But this is, you know, this is what it's going to go. This is what we're going to be looking at. And I'm presuming that the electors do vote for President Electoral, Mr. Donald Trump, on, what is it, Monday or Tuesday? Today's the 15th. I got to do that whole thing with 16th, 17th, 18th. Monday is the 19th. And we'll talk a little bit about the process of how that's happening. People have been asking me on Twitter.
Real quick, it's Ask the Electors, and there's a link on the website.
Yeah, I mean, do that. I mean, by all means, ladies and gentlemen, people are always asking me, what can I do? And I, to be honest with you, I'm like, well,
I would say I think Celebrity Apprentice is really going downhill without you, Mr. President.
Yeah.
Resign and get back to the show.
I guess what I should be doing is saying, do you have a time machine? And then if the answer is no, then it takes a lot of the options off the table. But
you mean for Stein 2020?
No, I'm not saying to go towards the future.
Oh, okay. Not a future time machine.
But, you know, I think we're still, I'm going to be honest with you, still, I think like many people, trying to figure out what to do going forward, what the best use of this show is, and also, you know, which will keep people engaged. And I think it's, you know, a combination of how to fight back, a combination of keeping certain ideas alive and trying to foster those ideas, and also to educate people on what government does, you know, to continue that project. Because I think I know that we have a lot of new listeners who, you know, need to be kept up to speed in terms of things like Medicare and Social Security, because when the attacks on these things start, people need to know, have some ability to parse the bullshit from the, I guess, just the normal human shit or whatever it is. I'm not exactly sure how that works. And, of course, we're also going to spend a healthy amount of time mocking different people, maybe just in the office, but hopefully outside the office as well. Reuters TV.
Kind of limited.
Reuters TV is the revolutionary video news app for busy people who want to know what on earth is going on. Created by the world's largest news organization, Reuters TV is video news as it should be. No hot air, no talking heads, and no theatrics. And, you know, you get your hot air and your theatrics here, folks. So, very important to get a sense. And, you know, the thing about Reuters is that this is where a lot of other outlets get their news. When they're not doing any of their own reporting, it's coming from Reuters. So you get it here first, and it gives you a sense of, like, what, you know, part of what's going to be really important, too, I think, going forward is to increase your media savvy and to understand the flow of news and the way it's working. Other features include custom news broadcasts between 5 and 30 minutes updated throughout the day, scheduled downloads of broadcasts to watch offline, live feeds of major news events such as the presidential debates or press conferences. Available, it's on your favorite device, iOS, Android, Roku, Apple TV. It's personalized, always up to date, and ready when you are. It's basically the opposite of cable news. See for yourself. Go to Reuters.tv/majority. That's Reuters, spelled Reuters dot, just the word, letters, TV, /majority. What else did I want to touch on before? I think that was about it before we go and talk to Thomas Gagin. But we're going to be hearing in the next, I don't know, day and a half, we're going to be find out whether or not these legislators in North Carolina are going to be passing legislation that fundamentally undercuts the power of the governor, that they have now, the Republicans lost to the Democrat in North Carolina. And they may pass a host of bills that basically leave the governor without much authority. My understanding is, too, that they're also going to attempt to limit what the Supreme Court of North Carolina gets to hear.
Yes.
Because the incoming governor has said, if you do this, I'm going to pack the Supreme Court and we're going to reverse it. I mean, this is really stunning stuff. And I got to say that I don't think the Democrats should go quite this far, but I really do think it is time for the Democrats to, I mean, for there to go further than they have ever even contemplated going before in terms of, you know, and one of the points that Thomas Gagin brings up here is that, well, I'll let him say it, but it's basically they're going to have to start to function in some respects with a little bit less concern for these institutions that are already essentially been fully, I guess, disempowered and relegated to the trash heap. So, and not necessarily institutions, but norms, I think. And just the New York Times, this is the way the New York Times starts off this piece. I just got to read this. This is hilarious and horrible. Republicans in North Carolina legislature on Wednesday took the highly unusual step of moving to strip power from the incoming Democratic governor. It's a little bit more than highly unusual, it seems to me. But that's about as far as they could bring themselves to call it. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Thomas Gagin on four things we the people can do about our unjust voting system and a President Trump. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome back to the program Tom Gagin on the four things we the people can do about our unjust voting system and President Trump. I should also say Tom is a prolific author. Several books, including Whose Side Are You On? The Secret Lives of Citizens, The Law in Shambles, Only One Thing Can Save Us, and Were You Born on the Wrong Continent? Tom, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Sam. Glad to be here.
This is obviously a timely piece, and it's a great piece because it both talks about before the 19th of December and after. So let's start first with the premises that you're working on in terms of. You say this election was rigged. How so?
Well, the Constitution is rigged. You know, of course, everybody knows that Hillary Clinton has now won by close to 3 million votes. This is the second time that the Republicans have put in a minority president. The first time George Bush in the last 15 years, the first time George Bush, we had the worst president in our lifetime, and now we're going to get, again, somebody even worse. It's not just that the Electoral College is rigged. The Senate is rigged. You know, North Dakota, South Dakota, they have the same voting power as the state of California. 500,000 people in Wyoming have the same power as voting power as the people in California. That's worse than the Electoral College. And the House is rigged because a partisan gerrymandering, and you have situations where, you know, the majority of the votes cast for Congress in a state like Pennsylvania might be Democratic, but it's two-thirds of the congressional delegation is Republican. And the Supreme Court is rigged because the people who are elected in this rigged system appoint the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court is also rigged in the fact that these justices stay on for years and years and years and years with no retirement date. So there's no regular turnover that reflects where the country is going. The whole system is rigged. And it's one of the frustrations I've had as a lawyer, and that is really what I do, I would say, 99% of the time, not write books. It's every aspect of causes that our office has brought over the years have been blocked in one way or another by the fact that we don't have majority rule in the United States. We don't have one person, one vote. We don't have an accurate reflection of popular will.
And that's what we should say. I mean, for whom is it rigged? I mean, it obviously wasn't set up for Republicans, right? I mean, the institution of the Senate, which is wholly undemocratic, and
yeah.
This Electoral College, wholly undemocratic. The fruit from the poison seed, I guess, is the Supreme Court, and to a certain extent, the congressional redistricting.
It's rigged for people who benefit from the frustration of majority rule, and that in a market capitalist society is going to be overwhelmingly the rich and the powerful. So people with private economic power benefit from a system that is rigged against majority rule, that is rigged against the have-nots or relative have-nots against those that have. You know, I don't think democracy and capitalism are incompatible at all, but if you don't have any democracy, true democracy, true one-person, one-vote, majority-rule democracy, to put up against capitalism, it becomes more and more skewed towards outrageous amounts of inequality, not just in income, but in power. And that's what's been happening in the United States.
Well, I mean, it's sort of amazing when you contemplate the idea of how sacrosanct money is treated as a form of speech, whereas our votes are just not quite... sacrosanct. I mean, both in terms of suppression. I mean, Lawrence Lessig was talking about, some time ago, raising trying to sue based on that notion that came out of Bush v. Gore about the equal protection for the voters in terms of one person's vote being valued as much as another. That's why, theoretically, the Supreme Court of the United States ended the recount, right? It would be unfair to have some people's votes recounted and not others. Meanwhile, 3 million people in California's votes are worth, what 200 people's votes are worth in Wyoming or something.
Well, Sam, here's the tragedy, if I may comment on that. You know, had Hillary Clinton been elected and had Merrick Garland gone on to the Supreme Court, there are at least two things that would have happened. Number one, the court, which might even now, with Kennedy on the court as a swing vote, find gerrymandering unconstitutional. And that would really free up the people's house, the lower house, to be the people's house again. And the second thing is that they would have rolled back for sure, not just Citizens United, but the far more pernicious case back in 1974 of Buckley versus Valeo, where the Supreme Court majority found that money was a form of speech, which is exactly what just drove Justice Thurgood Marshall nuts, you know, the notion that money was speech. Poor Justice Marshall could never get over that. And that, I think, not only think, I've got a confidence factor of like 98% that had she been elected, that notion of money being speech would have been turned back by a new 5-4 Supreme Court, and that campaign finance reform that would have been enacted after that date, whether immediately in Hillary Clinton's first term or later, would therefore be constitutional, whereas now it's often struck down by the Supreme Court. That's just part of the strategy. We lost a golden opportunity to transform this system, even in the face of what would have probably been gridlocked between the presidency and the Congress. The court wouldn't have been gridlocked, and there would have been really major changes in the country. It's so tragic.
It's horribly tragic. But let's talk about so what is to be done here. Your first suggestion, and like I said, the electors will vote, as it stands today, on Monday the 19th. And will you just explain, I mean, you're calling for a boycott, but will you just explain the sort of the mechanics of this? Electors go to their state houses, right? Is that where they all meet?
Yeah.
Does there need to be a quorum? I mean, what? Just tell me the mechanics to the extent that you're aware of them.
There does have to be a quorum in the various states, but there doesn't have to be a quorum in terms of electoral college people voting. You know, it would be nice that if there was, say, a two-thirds quorum rule for the ballots coming in before the process could take place, then the 17 Clinton states could block any kind of election. But there's no quorum rule in the counting of it. But there is a quorum rule in the electoral college when it occurs at the state level. My view about this, and it's just taking kind of stratagems that people use back in the 1930s and in protesting fascist regimes, and is just not to lend any legitimacy to this process. I don't think that the 17 Clinton states can overturn the election. I don't think that you can get faithless electors from the other states to renege and vote for Clinton. I just don't think that's possible. But I think there's some legitimacy to the argument that this election was conducted under rules with the Electoral College. I mean, we could have done something to change it. For example, let's suppose in 2008 you had a Democratic Congress, a Democratic House, and a Democratic Senate. And let's assume for the moment that the filibuster didn't apply in the Senate and majority rule would have been enough to get something through. The Democrats could have passed a law requiring, at least in my view, it would have been constitutional to pass a law, requiring that the Electoral College distribute the votes proportionally based on the popular vote.
Right.
But they didn't. I mean, we've neglected the Electoral College, our side, and I'm referring to the Democrats, shown it a certain benign neglect. That's all of us. You know, I have done that. So the election was conducted under these rules. I think it's very hard at this point to challenge the outcome. I do think it's very important to get rid of the Electoral College. And I think the beginning of that is, and the minimum that can be done, is at least have the 17 states, the Clinton states, plus the one or two districts, I guess, in Maine and Nebraska, where she has electors, to refuse to participate in this process. Not to say that we're challenging Trump's election in any specific way, but just saying this is illegitimate. It's not recognizing the popular vote, which should be the way that the presidency is elected. And we're not going to participate in this anymore. We're not going to send in the ballots. The Congress, the President and the Speaker, the President of the Senate and the Speaker of the House, and the joint session of Congress, which will take place on December, I'm blanking actually on the date in which it takes place, they have the right to send to the, direct the states, the Secretary of State, or the federal judge in the state where the electors meet, to send in copies of the ballots, which are supposed to be kept there in the states if they aren't transmitted to the House and the Senate. First of all, I think it's symbolically important that those ballots not be transmitted saying we're not participating. And I think it's symbolically important to make the Senate president, who is Biden, and the Speaker of the House, Ryan, direct the judge or the Secretary of State to send in the ballots that are kept in the state and opened. And I think it's symbolically important that those be blank ballots. I think it's a form of, you know, at the very least, some Gandhi-type resistance, like we're not participating in this illegitimate system anymore, and make it a big show, spectacle, not only for people in this country, but for people around the world who keep wondering why is the United States a democracy if the majority aren't electing the president, if the second place loser is installed in the White House. I think that's very important, and I think it's important to delegitimate the system. In the longer term,
I got into an argument around Thanksgiving time about the protests, and to what end? Why, they're just whining about they didn't like the person who won the election. And I said, well, it is, you know, at the very least, to signify to my daughter that not everybody goes along with what this guy said and doesn't think that he deserves to be president. I mean, they're just putting down that marker. And whether it's about the president himself or whether it's about the process in which elected him has relevance, right? I mean, this is the mode I think that we need to sort of move into where it's the last thing that we have. In a broader sense, I guess my point is, and we're going to move into where we actually do have some power in on your list, but in areas where we have no power, it seems to me that protest becomes that much more important. I mean, in areas where we have power, we need to exercise that power. But this is an area where we just don't have the power.
Yes, and in areas where we don't have the power, we should exercise our moral power.
Right,
and that's very important. You know, the civil rights laws of the Jim Crow laws of the South didn't come down crashing down when people began protesting, but when people got on the buses, when they began disobeying those laws, or when they and not with the idea that they weren't going to be punished, they were happy to go to jail to be punished for these laws. They were just acknowledging that these laws were illegitimate. You know, and I refer in this article to Lincoln. Lincoln didn't try to overturn literally or say that we should resist the Dred Scott decision and go try to free him, but that we should do everything possible to recognize the illegitimacy of a system in which that kind of opinion can occur. And I think it's a lot more important than just protesting Donald Trump getting in, who's an appalling person. I agree with that. But the process by which he was elected is appalling. First, let's focus on that. And I think the broader thing, and it's kind of my frustration with the Democratic Party and the left generally, and I hear when I say Democrat, I refer to everybody from Bernie Sanders to Hillary Clinton, is that we need a new constitution. You know, that's fundamentally a problem. Now, we're not going to get a whole brand new constitution, but there are ways that we can trim and tailor and fix and amend the current existing constitution. And until people on the left, center left, hard left, whatever left you want to call it, understand that we're going nowhere in this country until we change the Constitution in some way that pushes it more towards majority rule. The Constitution is the problem. And unless we own up to that, we're going nowhere. And it comes out in this kind of fantasy that exists in this country that on the left, especially among progressives generally, is center left, hard left. Again, I'm referring to everybody across the board. There's no real difference. That the presidency is the transformative institution in the country. It's not. The Congress is the transformative institution, at least in terms in how the country, people in the country live, in income equality, fairness, social justice. It's the Congress that is significantly more important than the presidency. And it's the frustration with the Congress, especially with the Senate, where you have this wacky system of two states, two senators per state, and wild rules like the filibuster and personal holds on things that just embody minority rule, which only benefits the well-to-do. it's the frustration with the Congress that has led to this bizarre, and I do mean bizarre, focus on the presidency, on Obama, or rather on Bill Clinton, or other as these people who can perform some kind of transformation that constitutionally they cannot perform without the Congress. And that if the Congress doesn't do it, somehow they're responsible because they haven't exercised their personal magic over the Congress in some way. It doesn't work that way. And we have to recognize that we have a problem with the Constitution that we have to work at fixing in every way we can, whether it's getting rid of the filibuster, getting rid of gerrymandering, putting in compulsory voting, which is what I know you're going to ask about next, to fix the imbalance that exists. Sorry for the rant.
No. Thank you for the rant. So you also mentioned that House, Senate, and Democrats should object to the counting of votes from states that sought to suppress the vote. But I want to move to.
Oh, and one other thing.
Yes.
That I think they ought to at least do, even though it'll go down symbolically. The two houses are going to meet. Well, those two houses can adopt what the counting rules are going to be. As I said before, the Congress could, under the Supremacy Clause, could direct that these states divide up the Electoral College votes by the proportion of the popular votes in the states. And they could say, that's how we want to have the Electoral College votes counted. Go back and figure out which electors are going to be bound to do which. That kind of resolution would go down the drain.
Right.
The Republicans would vote it down. But make it, you know? Just put it out there. Let people see it.
I think
people understand the Electoral College is wrong, even some of the Trump voters.
And is that the audience? Is it the audience for those who voted against Trump and then some of the Trump voters just as a marker? I wonder.
No, it's for ourselves, first of all. Well, it is for some of the Trump voters, but it's for the country in a more generic sense. How should I put it? It's that wonderful Obama phrase. He is a great phrase maker. A teachable moment.
Mm-hmm.
It is a teachable moment about the system being broken. And it is a teachable moment that there's another way of doing it. And it's a teachable moment that what we're doing isn't just a malfunction. It's illegitimate in a political sense. And it is only to the extent that we whittle away at the legitimacy of these minority rule mechanisms that we can begin to, refound the country in a way that will ensure a more stable republic, keep the republic, to quote Ben Franklin, and after the Constitutional Convention, we have a republic if we can keep it. I think the task before us in the 21st century is how to keep a republic, because what we have right now is more dysfunctional as a republic than it was in 1787. I mean, the deviations in the Senate are much worse than they were when there were just 13 states. The deviations from one person, one vote. The minority rule mechanisms, the filibuster, is much more routinely used than it was. Electorate, although, of course, women were excluded then, blacks were excluded, but the people who were eligible to vote did vote. They were engaged in the system much more than people are now, where you have midterm elections where only 37% of the voter eligible population shows up.
Well, all of
that has to change.
The next solution I find really intriguing, because it combines a couple of different things, but it essentially, and I'm trying to find the quote that I know is in here where you say, here it is. Instead of trying to bridge the divide in our country, the Democrats should now widen it. And you suggest that the primary mechanism to do so would be to make it compulsory to vote in states like California and New York in particular, but all of the, you know, the so-called, I guess, blue states, the states that...
the 17 states that went for Clinton, at least.
And it's, I mean, most conceivable, obviously, in states where Democrats control the state houses. And certainly in California and New York can do that. Just between New York and California, if there was compulsory voting, you would see a, rather than a 3 million vote gap, probably, I don't know, double that.
I didn't count it up for, and I have to say, I had help with the math here, Sam. I'm embarrassed to tell you.
You don't, we're a complete math-free zone on this show.
If you had, I'm supposed to do some counting as a lawyer, so I'm a little embarrassed that I needed help. But if California alone had some compulsory voting, and I'm talking about a system that is like the system that exists in like 25 different countries of the world, Belgium, Australia, others, it's not unusual, although it's not the majority way that democracies across the world vote. But let's assume that the same percentage by which Clinton won with in a relatively low turnout California were extended if everybody voted, she would have won by close to 6 million votes just from that one state. She would have beaten Trump by, it would have added about, I think the exact number, let me check the article, it's 3.2 million
right
to her national margin over Trump from one state. If you add in New York, if you add in the other, especially in the large population Clinton states, that would have become a disparity that is too big to ignore. Blow up the disparity, that's point one. Point two is that even having one or two or three states go to compulsory voting would set off a kind of chain reaction. First of all, we'd be a house divided. We'd have these Clinton states, which have these huge voter turnouts, including in midterms, which I think is
right.
absolutely crucial, since the midterm is really the device by which the Republicans control the country. You would have these huge disparities in the Clinton states or the blue states or some of the blue states and the red states, which are going in the opposite direction. They're putting in laws that try to restrict people from voting. So it creates a dynamic where you have a whopping popular imbalances between the blues and the reds, and you have truly started to create a constitutionally house divided in Lincoln's sense. And one or other of those republics, many republics, republics within our broader republic, is going to prevail. It's not going to be that the country splits apart in a secession. One form will take out the other. I really, truly believe that if you had this kind of compulsory voting system, you know, like Australia and Belgium and a couple of European countries, or even got the voting rate up from 57% to 80%, especially in midterms. And 80% is kind of the norm in countries like Denmark and others.
And we could we could do, there's many different ways of doing this. The vote by mail. I mean, there's a whole myriad of different ways of doing that. The practicality of it is not so much of an issue, but
Sam, that's where I disagree. I don't think vote by mail or anything else is going to make a damn bit of difference. It's really the problem. It's that they aren't engaged in it, and unless you make it a moral obligation as well as a political and legal obligation for people to participate in the republic, our side, the Democratic side, my party, is not going to be able to resist all the forces that are making the country more unequal, more unfair, more in despair. You have to correct all these minority rule mechanisms. These are minority rule mechanisms that are set up assuming that the have-nots are going to vote. That's what the founders assumed. Unless you bring in more of those have-nots, those minority rule defenses are too strong to allow the Democratic Party, which is supposed to represent that side of the country, from putting its agenda into effect. The only way to correct the Constitution constitutionally is to expand the number of people who are voting. And that is what we have to do. It's not necessary. It's not the sufficient condition. Expanding it isn't enough. There are other things that have to be done. But if we don't expand it, all those other things won't matter. You know, changing our pitch, you know, talking about deindustrialization more, being more like Bernie or being less like Bernie, none of that is going to matter unless you bring more people into the process. And they won't come in because, I don't know, there's some sort of atrophy of the spirit. And they aren't going to come in unless we actually make it a moral obligation or a legal obligation to come in, as it once was a moral obligation for people to come in. People in this country did vote at very, very, very high rates at one point because democracy was a cause. They felt committed to it. We were the only democracy in the world. We had to show that we were behind this thing. Now there's just this passivity, which isn't going to change until you begin making it clear to people that they have a duty to do this. It's not just a right. It's a duty. It's an obligation. And our liberal reluctance, oh, well, we can't tell people what to do, et cetera, and just leave them alone on their iPhones. No, 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 no. We have to tell them, you have to do this.
And let's go to the fourth, a step. And
sorry, if I ran it enough, Sam.
No,
I'm sorry.
No, I think this idea of compulsory voting, I think it's honestly one of the best ideas I have heard. It's also, you know, it's just from the sense that it is going to force people to engage in their government and have a greater awareness of it, at least, you know, sort of incrementally in some instances. It's also one where it's one of those things where it can be done unilaterally in places. It's actually something that could be done theoretically. I mean, you could.
Oh, yeah.
And it also is something that makes it very difficult to match. I mean, as a to weaponize the idea of compulsory voting, maybe that's not the right word. You know, you could challenge Republican-controlled states, do the same thing. Of course, they never would.
But here's what will happen. You know, if you have part of the country transformed with the and inculcate the sense of obligation that they have to vote, that will spill over into some of the red states. It can't be combined or cabined in just the blue states. In other words, if people in these red states who don't vote now see this mass voting in other states, it will have some impact. I'm not saying it's going to dramatically increase the voting rates, but you will see some spillover to that. So, for example, it might in the Hispanic population generally, if you've got states with high Hispanic percentages and everybody is voting, that's going to affect Hispanic populations that exist now in the red states, where the voting rates is much lower. And, you know, you look at Texas, Hispanic, Asian, black, you know, the minority population there will feel some spillover from seeing what happens in California, from seeing what happens in New York and so forth. So, I'd like to say one more thing about compulsory voting, because aside from mentioning here, and if people think this is such a radical notion, Barack Obama has come out in favor of compulsory voting. I'm no more radical than Barack Obama. The notion that somehow this is unconstitutional, I mean, you know, I'm a lawyer, right? So we have juries here. We pull in people screaming that they can't be compelled to do this, who are forced to sit on medical malpractice cases for 3 months.
Yes.
You know, so and they have to render their opinion, whether they like it or not, damn it. They can cite the First Amendment, but they better come back with a vote as to whether Mr. X or Miss X should get the death penalty or not. You know, so if that's all constitutional, just telling people to show up and vote and cast a blank ballot if you like, or just or pay the fine of $25, that's nothing compared to the compulsion that we already do in forcing people to give their views about guilt and innocence and liability in our judicial system.
All right, so let's go to number four.
Sure.
The idea of creating an interstate compact, presumably by those same states, which would create a what you call a quasi-constitution. Now, I was just
quasi-counter-constitution.
A quasi-counter-constitution. I mean, I was just contemplating, you know, something like the Clean Airs, the Clean Skies Initiative, I think, under the Bush administration, which actually caused at least two or three states to roll back or to actually to raise the limits that they had on, I think it was mercury at the time. And so there are mechanisms for the federal government to inhibit the ability of states to basically go off on their own. But these are all tell us like the nature of these arrangements are sort of sidestep those concerns.
Well, the interstate compacts actually that exist now, they relate to boundary disputes now or water resource allocation and other things. There are these compacts that are in effect now. They require the consent of Congress if they infringe on the sovereignty of the federal government in some way. And as a boundary dispute would, you know, if Pennsylvania and Indiana decide the line should go over here rather than over there, as a citizen, I would I want the United States Congress to approve it. These are measures that don't infringe federal sovereignty, and they're, to some extent they are rights that can be expressed without necessarily being fulfilled immediately, but it's the long-term goals of these states to ensure that they are fulfilled. So, for example, you know, a right to employment, a right to health care. In other areas, I push it a little further. In the environmental section, just that these states will enter an agreement that to the they will carry out what they decide among themselves or their respective shares of meeting the Paris Environmental Accords if the United States doesn't. That doesn't infringe the sovereignty of the United States. It just it's something that the states have power to do anyway. Now, the federal government could come in and try to preempt the states from doing that, but I dare them to do it. I think that that would that's a little contrary to the whole conservative view about how the 10th Amendment, which is the amendment that reserves all powers to the states, work. But it may not even be a legitimate exercise of the preemption power.
That's
something that would go into court. The final thing that I wanted to hit on this is, because I, you know, people think I'm a labor lawyer, which I am, but we do, although we do a lot of other law, but I always deep down think of our firm as a labor law firm, even if we're off on other causes and tangents from time to time. I think it's really important to have a law that says that people won't be fired without just cause,
right?
And that people, if I may dream in a bigger sense, that I would love to see the Democrats at the state level commit, and this is would be a real strong message to the high school grads who voted for Trump, to commit to corporate law changes that wouldn't be preempted by labor law, corporate law changes in their respective states that would allow workers to elect at least one or two or three of their number as directors of the boards of corporations of, say, over 1,000 employees or more, so that plain old high school grads could get on the boards. Now, I understand that corporations incorporate in Delaware and it wouldn't apply to them and the states couldn't force them, but at least symbolically it would be important. And those states could also pass laws that say, look, in terms of handing out state contracts, we're going to look at the corporate law structure of these companies and we're going to give preference to corporations that provide for some sort of worker voice at the corporate board level, not unions, and not trying to interfere with federal labor law, which would be preempted, but just saying in their own corporate law, keep labor unions out of it for the sake of this law. Just laws like in Germany that would provide for the workers to elect some of the members of the board of directors for corporate purposes, not for labor purposes. That would be a powerful way of the Democratic Party aligning with working people in this country.
Well, from your mouth to whoever the Democrats end up being, to Jerry Brown and Andrew Cuomo's ears, some of those may be tougher to reach. Some of those ears may be tougher to reach than others. But certainly,
Jerry Brown would probably at least entertain the thought.
Absolutely,
you know, that's one of the great things about Jerry Brown.
Exactly. So, I mean, and he gave a speech last night, sort of setting, you know, that I thought was consistent at least with the idea that you're talking about. I mean, he was basically saying like, if Trump pulls down a satellite and we're not getting picture, you know, weather data, climate data, we'll launch one. And I think to a certain extent that has to be that spirit of defiance, I think, is going to have to come from the states. And it's going to have to be a defiance that has implications outside of the state. That is, in the case of climate change, but also in terms of our process as a nation. And I think this is a great place for people to start thinking about on how to organize and how to pressure in specific locations. I mean, Andrew Cuomo certainly would be perhaps an obstacle to some of these things in New York, but he's a softer target than he was 4 years ago. I can tell you that. And so, Tom Gagin, I really appreciate it, and we'll put a link to this piece. Thank you so much for your time today.
Sure, Sam.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break and head into the fun half of the program, wherein we will have fun. What happened to my sound sheet? I lost my sound sheet. I love this idea of just using the states as a vehicle for this stuff. I mean, this is what I'm talking about. There are places where we have power, or could have power, in the short run, mid run, and people have to focus on these things.
Right.
And this is where that value of Zephyr Teachout running so well against Andrew Cuomo, there's value there. There's a template. There's awareness on his part that there's a certain amount of weakness that he has with the left, and a concerted campaign. I love this idea of compulsory voting. I love it. I love it. And since we're talking about this, with Jerry Brown talking about the idea of states now, and I've got a piece talking about how the attorney generals in places like New York and California and across the country, Democratic states, are going to enforce laws. I mean, in New York, they're already talking about it's tougher. I mean, it's tougher in some respects to do this on a state level, right? There are acts that, at the very least, can control fraud on places like Wall Street and whatnot, and we haven't seen that much aggressiveness by Democratic AGs to pursue that. But maybe it changes when there's a Republican president. Sad to say, but. So there's this dynamic where state leaders, Democratic leaders, are empowered because it is them standing between essentially the citizens and the Trump, soon-to-be Trump regime. Here is Jerry Brown talking about how California can and will stand up to Trump. He was playing some music.
Pumping himself up.
Just going to be a dance party.
Yeah. California's going to have a giant synth.
We have the laws, we have the tools of enforcement, and we have the political will. And we will set the stage, we'll set the example, and whatever Washington thinks they're doing, California is the future. So a lot of people say, what the hell are you doing, Brown? You're not a country. Well, judged by measures of gross domestic product of over $2.2 trillion, we're the fifth or sixth largest economy in the world. And we got a lot of firepower. We got the scientists, we got the universities, we have the national labs, and we have the political clout and sophistication for the battle. And we will persevere. Have no doubt about that.
There it is.
There's the map.
Damn shame Jerry Brown's not 35 years younger. But
well, I mean, I always said, why, if we're going to have a sort of older centrist Democrat run for office, why not him?
Yeah, you know? Indeed. All right, we got to take a quick break. Head into the fun half. You can call the program, 646-257-3920. If you missed our ad today, always check out the blog post for the ad. Also, you want to express your concerns to the electors? We have a link for that on our homepage today as well. The number 646-257-3920 is the number, 646-257-3920. Don't forget, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Hey, it's your membership that makes this show possible. It is. We are not bound by our YouTube hits or our corporate overlords or any of it. When we book someone, when we present to you opinions, it is simply because that's what we believe. And we don't think that we're going to necessarily be rewarded for it. Often we're not. But if you want to keep hearing it, become a member. Support the show. Pennies a day. Also, MajorityReportKickback.com. If you have to buy crap from Amazon, do it through our link, MajorityReportKickback.com. Be right back.